Chapter 14. I heard voices coming from the big drawing room, but I didn't go in. Instead, I walked down the corridor towards the kitchen and pushed open the door. There, I found Nanny, a large, cheerful old woman. I knew she had worked for the family for many years, looking after the children.
"It's Mr. Charles, isn't it?" she said. "Come in and have a cup of tea."
I sat down in the big, comfortable kitchen, and Nanny brought me a cup of tea and two sweet biscuits. I felt like a small child again. I felt that I was safe and that everything was all right because Nanny was there.
"Miss Sophia will be glad you're here," said Nanny. "She's be getting rather overexcited."
At that moment, the door opened with a rush and Sophia came in.
"Oh, Charles," she said. "Oh, Nanny, I'm so glad he's here."
"I know you are, dear."
Nanny smiled to herself and went into the room next door and shut the door behind her. I put my arms round Sophia.
"Dearest," I said, "you're shaking. What's the matter?" "I'm frightened, Charles," said Sophia. "I'm frightened. Someone in this house, someone I see and speak to every day, is a murderer. If only I knew who it was."
I didn't know what to say. I wished I could take her home with me, away from this house.
"And the worst thing is," she whispered, "is that we may never know."
I knew she was right, and that we might never know who poisoned Aristide Leonides. And then I remembered something I'd wanted to ask her. "Tell me, Sophia," I said, "how many people in this house knew about your grandfather's Esserine eye drops, and that they were poisonous if injected?"
"That doesn't help, Charles," she said, "because we all knew. We were all with Grandfather one day after lunch when Brenda put the Esserine drops in each of his eyes. Josephine asked why it said not to be taken on the bottle of eye drops, and Grandfather smiled and said, 'If Brenda made a mistake and injected me with eye drops instead of insulin, I would probably stop breathing and die because my heart isn't very strong.' Josephine said, 'Ooh.' We were all listening. We all heard him say it."
So Aristide Leonides had actually told the murderer exactly how to kill him. I took a deep breath. Sophia seemed to know what I was thinking and said,
"Yes, it's rather horrible, isn't it?"
Just then, Nanny came back into the kitchen. She must have overheard what we were saying.
"I think you should forget about such horrible things as murder," she said. "Leave it to the police. It's their business, not yours."
"But, Nanny, don't you realise that someone in this house is a murderer?" said Sophia.
"Nonsense," replied Nanny. "The front door is open all the time. Anyone could get into this house."
She again went into the room next door.
"Come on, Charles," said Sophia. "Let's go to the drawing room. There's a family meeting about Roger's business affairs. If you're going to marry me, you need to see what my family is really like."
In the drawing room, all the family were there, except Brenda and Josephine. Philip's face looked cold and serious, while Roger's face was red and he looked annoyed. Clemency, who was looking at the paintings on the wall, looked calm and cool, and Edith was sitting up very straight doing some knitting. Magda and Eustace, both so good-looking, sat together on the sofa. Eustace's handsome face was unhappy. As Sophia and I came in, everyone stopped talking and looked at us. Philip frowned.
"Sophia, this is a private family meeting," he said coldly.
I heard the click of Mr. Haviland's knitting needles.
"Charles and I hope to get married," Sophia said in a clear and determined voice. "I want him to be here."
"And why not?" said Roger. "Charles knows all about it already."
"Do sit down," Clemency said.
I looked at her thankfully as I found myself a chair. The family meeting continued.
"I think we should do what Aristide wanted," said Mr. Haviland. "Roger, when the will is sorted out, you can have my money to help save the company."
Roger pulled at his hair.
"No, Aunt Edith, no," he exclaimed.
"I suppose," said Philip, "that I might be able to give you a little money."
"That's not very fair to our children," said Magda quickly. "I'm not going to take anyone's money," Roger said excitedly.
Of course he's not, agreed Clemency. Anyway, Magda added, Roger will have his own money when the will is sorted out.
But surely he won't have the money in time to save the company, said Eustace angrily. Eustace is right, said Roger. Nothing can stop Associated Foods from going bankrupt. It's too late.
He sounded almost pleased.
And what does the company matter compared to the fact that father is dead?
We are only trying to help, Philip said stiffly, his face turning slightly red.
I know, Phil, I know, said Roger. But there's nothing you can do. It was all my fault. I was in charge.
Yes, Philip said slowly, looking at him. You were in charge.
Edith de Havilland stood up.
I think we've talked enough about this, she said,
with such power in her voice that everyone went quiet. It seemed that the family meeting was over. Magda and Eustace got up and left the room, while Roger put his hand on Philip's arm and said,
Thanks, Phil, for trying to help.
The brothers went out together, followed by Sophia, who said that she would get my room ready as I was staying the night. Edith de Havilland put away her knitting. She looked towards me as if she was going to speak, but she changed her mind, sighed, and went out after the others. I was left alone with Clemency, who was looking out of the window, and went to stand beside her.
I'm glad that's over, she said. Magda arranged it all, just like a play. Act Two, the family meeting. There was nothing really to discuss.
She sounded pleased about it rather than sad.
Don't you understand? She asked. We're free, at last. Roger has been unhappy for years. He was never any good at business, and it broke his heart because he failed his father. Roger loved his father a great deal. They all did.
Clemency turned to look at me.
It's ridiculous to think that Roger would have killed his father, especially for money. Roger was actually glad when he knew the company would go bankrupt. He was looking forward to our new life.
Where were you going? I asked.
To Barbados, she replied. A cousin of mine died recently and left me a small house and some land. We'll be very poor, but we'll be together, away from all Roger's family. And I don't mind not having much money. I don't like money. I was happy with my first husband when we were poor, and I didn't love him like I love Roger.
She closed her eyes and smiled to herself. I could tell how strong her feelings were, and I was sure that Clemency meant what she said. She wasn't interested in money or living in luxury.
Are you still going to Barbados? I asked.
Oh, yes, as soon as the police will let us. When everything has been sorted out, we can leave. I hope it doesn't take too long.
Clemency, I said, do you have any idea who did this? Any idea at all? She gave me a strange look, and when she spoke, her voice sounded stiff and awkward.
I'm a scientist. I deal with facts, not guesses. All I can say is that Brenda and Lawrence are the obvious suspects.
So you think they did it?
Clemency shrugged her shoulders and stood for a moment as if she was listening. Then she went out of the room, passing Edith de Havilland on the way. Edith came straight over to me.
I want to talk to you, she said, about Philip. I hope you didn't get the wrong idea about him. Philip is rather difficult to understand. He may seem cold, but he isn't really.
I didn't really think, I began.
She didn't let me speak.
Philip is really a dear, when you understand him. You see, Aristide loved all his children dearly, but Roger, the oldest, was his true favourite. And I think Philip felt it, and though he always hides his feelings, he suffered, as children do. He's always been jealous of Roger, even if he doesn't realise it himself.
So do you think that Philip is secretly pleased that Roger's company has failed?
Yes, said Mr. Havilland. I do think that, and it upset me that Philip didn't want to help Roger straight away.
"Why should he?" I said. "Roger is a grown man with no children to think about. If he was ill or very poor, his family would help. But I'm sure Roger would prefer to start a new life without their help."
"Yes, I'm sure he would," said Mr. Haviland. "And so would Clemency."
She looked at me.
"I realize that this is all very difficult for Sophia," she continued. "I'm sorry that she has so much to deal with when she is still so young. I love them all, you know, Roger and Philip, and now Sophia, Eustace and Josephine. I love all my sister's children and grandchildren."
She paused for a few moments.
"Yes, I love them dearly, but not too much," she added,
before turning abruptly and going out of the room. I had the feeling that her last remark was important, but I did not understand it.